Welcome to the Fat Easy Musky Podcast. I'm Andy. Joined on the phone, I've got Gear Man Steve.
Hey, Andy. What's happening, buddy?
Oh, not too much. Not too much. So this is like the Easter, Memorial, 4th of July, Labor Day, Halloween, Thanksgiving, and Christmas edition.
Yeah, we're wrapping all the holidays up in one.
Yeah, that's right. So, anyways.
Very efficient, I'd have to say.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to tell you a little something here. You know, I'm not going to dwell too much on this much-needed break from doing the show. I know it might seem like all you got to do is sit up here and talk and stuff like that. There is a certain level amount of work and just needed some time to get everything clear, and now I'm focused again, and going to be slightly different moving forward. I don't anticipate trying to stay on the every 2 week thing that we did for a couple years, and then prior to that was 1 year. I mean, 1 week for however many years that was, once a week, I should say. Going to be a lot more loosely based, and kind of, I'm going to say, a shorter version. Instead of trying to fill an hour, if it's 15 minutes, it's 15 minutes. If it's an hour, it's an hour. And guys might get one every 3 months. You might get three a week. We're just going to see how things go and be a lot more loosely based. And but yeah, that's kind of basic, you know, how I think it's going to go moving forward. And I don't know, it can change. But
it's good though. It builds the anticipation and excitement. People will be wondering when the next one's coming.
Right. And you know, and I'll be honest, like when we first started the show, it was like I've got this whole fuel tank of stories and experiences. Man, that was pretty well empty. I was running on fumes for a while. And you know, try not to repeat. And I know that, you know, a lot of other shows, at least the ones that I listen to in the hunting and the fishing community, it's you sometimes have to recycle the stories. I made the best attempt not to. I'm sure that, you know, I have at some point, but I just, knowing that it's recorded, I just don't see the point in trying to do it twice. But you know, since that last one we did in March, which was, what would that have been, like 10 months ago?
Yeah.
Especially if we're going to do a shorter form of this, I've got some good stories to tell in the mix. You know, Steve and I went fishing a few times.
Yeah,
and this is just how life goes. And you know, I'm going to blame the kids because time moves differently when you have children.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And we went fishing 4th of July on our traditional 4th of July walleye trip.
Yeah.
And we're like, oh, actually, this was Steve that said, he goes, this show, the show that we do, because we anticipated on dropping one the week of the 4th. Well, Merry Christmas. it's just how the time went.
Yeah.
But...
because we were going to do it that week. We were like, oh, but we couldn't even get like 10 minutes that week to do it.
No, we couldn't.
The kids and everything. It was crazy.
It was crazy.
But we got a fishing trip in, so that was good.
We got that in, and then we also, we went down the river. And we did it in your boat.
With the active target. That was cool.
That was cool. We did that. I mean, you know, I was thinking, I'm like, oh, we're going to talk about this walleye trip because all this pertinent points that we had. And I'm like, when I called you a couple hours ago, I'm like, hey, are you free to do like a 20-minute show? And you're like, yeah. I'm like, hey, remember when we went walleye fishing? You're like, barely? I'm like, yeah, I barely remember it too. Other than the fact that we sucked again.
Yeah, it was sucked. That was a suck fest.
It was a suck fest. But I still remember the basic thing that like what you wanted to talk about, the topic was fishing off of recommendations.
Yeah, because if you remember, we got a tip that all these captains were catching this fish in a certain range and depth and everything, and we thought we'd get out there slam dunk because people were like, "Oh man, we were limiting it out in 2 hours, 3 hours." It was a grind. It's the man. So the day before recommendation changed in one day, which was wild.
Well, but, so okay, I like where we're at. We're gonna bounce back a little bit. So thinking about, you know, if you have a friend or someone that you can trust or openly talk to about your fishing spots, at some point you're going to be getting a recommendation or you're going to give a recommendation. And here's my recommendation. Just don't do it. Just two things can happen, okay? Either they're not going to catch fish or they're going to catch fish. And basically both are bad. Okay? Not catching fish is obvious because you're going to lose credibility and they're like, you know, you kind of screwed me on this one. I had one day to do this. The other one is they go and catch fish and then they're going to go and tell everyone else and then your spot is ruined.
Gone.
So anyways, that I kind of stole that. I fished, which is kind of a crazy thing. I'm going to throw this back. Only Steve is going to know this. For 2 years in a row, when I visited my aunt in Colorado, she lives in, well, she did live in Evergreen, and right down the road from her house was the blue quill.
Love it there.
Anyways, yes, the blue quill. Well, I was dating my wife at the time, and we went on two fly fishing trips for trout out of the blue quill. And both years we had the same guide. His name was Monroe. Really, really cool cat. And, you know, we went and had fun, you know, 2 years in a row, but one of those trips, I said, why don't you ever fish? And he says, because two things can happen, and they're both bad. Either I catch a fish or I don't. And I always thought that was amusing, so I use it halfway often. So, anyways,
it's funny you say that because, you know, you talk about recommendations and you talk about how valid they can be. And like you said, usually from the perspective of you giving a friend that recommendation, like it either doesn't happen, and then you got a friend saying, you know, you just let us on a wild goose chase, or they totally dominate that area. Next thing you know, they're on Facebook saying, look at all the great fish we caught, and you get no credit for even guiding them to that spot. So, you know, not that you need credit for anything, but you would hope they'd keep it a secret so that you have the spot for yourself. But from, you know,
there's a certain level. Yeah. The people that are like, oh, I don't need fame, I don't need this and that.
Yeah.
Deep down, they're going to at least want the, hey man, thanks for doing this. You know, you were right with that. You know, just give the validation of it. You don't need to be, you know, broadcast all over the planet about this.
So now that you brought up trout fishing, I'll give a quick trout fishing example. It was the first day. You know how the first day in Pennsylvania is. It's a nightmare. A million people everywhere.
Disgusts me. But go
ahead. It's and I haven't gone in years, but it used to be a tradition when I was a lot younger. With my cousins and I, we'd camp out. It'd be a big thing. It was a big event for us. So the 1 year my cousin was there with his daughter, she was probably 15 at the time, they weren't catching anything. Well, I went upstream. I found this honey hole, and I was catching a lot of fish with this, just the way I was fishing it. So finally I called my cousin and his daughter up and said, hey, do this. Here's a spot. Here's what they'll hit. Well, they start catching fish. All right. So I'm happy for them. They're happy. Lenny goes to text everybody, you know, look at all the fish we caught. Her dad's a master, passing it on to her, all this stuff. And I'm thinking, dude, you caught like nothing. If I didn't bring you up to this hole, you'd have been skunked. So, like I said, I didn't need credit for it. But it was like, it was a weird type of, he took credit for being this fishing master that he's passing on to his daughter.
I don't need the credit, but you didn't earn the credit.
Exactly. Yes. You don't have to say, you know, Steve showed her this, or, but don't go bragging that you're the guy that, you know, is this sage fisherman, a fish whisperer or something, you know?
So kind of along those lines, I'm going to switch this to deer hunting, and this is not going to be a deer hunting podcast, but I've got some really good deer hunting stories, some that'll blow your mind just on a chain of events. But basically, the buck that I wanted to shoot at Dad's this year, like the only one that I, and I'll explain more later, it got killed. The neighbor killed it, and, you know, no big deal. But I'm like, okay, now if I go out, I feel like I'm just wasting my time sitting out here. And I know it's not a waste of time, but just go with this for real quick. So a good friend of mine has a lot of different parcels, and he's like, hey man, I got you. Don't worry about it. I know what it's like to have your target killed. And He goes, how about you go sit over here on one of my pieces? And at first I'm like, no, I don't want to do it. But then it's like, you know what? A change of scenery would be nice, you know, a little bit of mystery. And then he's also like, hey, I got this other one set up over here. He goes, it's never been sat in like 2 years, and it probably won't get set at all this year. He goes, just go there. I'm not managing for it. If there's something there that you like, shoot it. I'm like, well, all right. So it's kind of like two areas that are just I'm blind to. And it didn't take me but a couple sits to where I'd be like, I'd call him up. He'd be like, hey, I'm going to be a bum. Do you care if I sit over here? And you just get used to just instead of saying like, oh, I'm out here hunting this and that. I ended up not shooting anything on those properties. But It was like, had I done it, I would have felt obligated to be like, listen, I didn't do anything special except I was here at the right time. I'm a leech. I'm a bum. And I will pass the credit on. Whereas like in your example was, look at how great this was, years of training and an eye to this. You're like, no, you just came in and you gravy grabber. You just came and took the glory. I, on the other hand, in this instance, is like, hey, man, I'm going to bum. Are you going to be there?
So you keep it real, though. That's why your podcast is so successful, because you do that.
So successful. It was so successful, it took me 10 months to spend the money from that I got from the first 8 years.
Oh, buddy.
Now I'm poor and need more viewers.
Oh, man.
No, but it's just, I think it's a different level in like, in the opening day of trout to me is it's so cringeworthy, at least in Pennsylvania, and I'm sure in other states. What kills me about it is you've got these people that only fish 1 to 2 days a year, and you can see it at any spot where a creek comes close to the road. They throw their trucks in park. They walk down with their hip waders that are like half loosely tied onto their belt. It's like all bell-bottomed in reverse at the top, flopping. The yellow rope stringer, their spinners. They've got like the vest on and the little trout net thing that they've got. And they're walking. And then you see the other ones that are like, it's 12:05. And they're walking back to the truck with a half a dozen strung up like, yeah, you need a fish killed? Call me. Look what I just did. And I just, I can't stand like that. Hey, we're getting a limit at this hole. Because they were just put there. Like, I could kill a lot of deer if they open up the cage and it's standing there looking at me like, where's the food? I'd be like, well, here's some lead.
And the big challenge in the trout community is the stock versus wild, you know, and the guys who are
there is no challenge.
Hardcore stocked trout are evil, and they do the purest wild trout. And then there's the guys, like you said, they sit on a 5-gallon bucket trying to sling them in, following the stalking truck, you know?
Yeah. The fishing equivalent of an ambulance chaser.
But the funny, I guess the funny thing is both groups still have a little bit of that arrogance about them. You know, one's kind of the more elitist, look at me catching a wild brown. The other's like, look at me, I'm a fish slayer. I'm a god of fish, and I cut all these on my power bait in 5 minutes. I guess that's the part of fishing I don't like. It's the grandstanding and the status they try to create through what they do.
Okay, so yeah, and along with that, so I'm not oblivious to the fact that both those groups, and you guys draw a parallel to this to the musky fishing community. I mean, it's not hard to do, but I'm going to pick on the trout because I can speak a little more freer without offending people. The both of those groups, the purist and the opening dayers, they need each other more than they want to admit. They are the odd couple. If it wasn't for the purists that are doing it all year long, they're the ones kind of driving an innovation. They're the ones that are driving, you know, the high-end equipment and all this new technology stuff. You know, and, you know, technology might not be a great word for it, but, like, the innovators and stuff like that. They're the ones that are out there still keeping the bait shops hopefully going and this and that, you know, to some extent. But also, there might not be too many trout if it wasn't for the weekend guys that are coming with their power bait, buying their licenses, buying
all the key
license sales, buying all the other latest technology garb stuff that fuels, you know, with the federal excise tax and all this other stuff that can keep these places clean and with fish.
Well, and I recently saw a stat, and I wish I had it in front of me so I can give the real numbers, but I don't. But it was Pennsylvania licenses and how many, you know, the species of targeted fish for those who are buying those licenses. And trout was, like, through the roof. And it's in, excuse me, it's not the purists who fish for wild trout in central PA, because that's such a small faction and small population. It's the ones around the urban areas like Pittsburgh and I guess they have it outside of Philly. And, you know, these are the guys that spend the same money for the license but only fish those 2 days a week. So they do drive a little bit of the economy that the purists benefit from, because that money then goes into restoration of habitat in some of these other areas that they you know, like to fish and is improving those waterways. Because they're not going to do it in western PA where just – industrialization wiped out all these streams that good luck bringing back habitat that'll produce wild trout. They'll continue to stock those. And there's people who buy the licenses for those, and then they'll dump the money into these other areas that benefit those who look down upon those who are sitting on a 5 gallon bucket. So it's just an interesting, like you said, there's a dependence between the two groups that, excuse me, if you look at it economically of how they're intertwined, there might be some appreciation for the fact that they're buying the power bait and that kind of thing, because they're only going to fish 1 or 2 days a year, and then all that revenue that they generate could go towards the rest of the state that sustains fishing for those who like to fish all year. So it's good.
It is super important. And I think, you know, I can draw parallels to this just about in every outdoor activity.
Oh yeah.
The hardcore bow hunter versus the opening weekend of rifle season. Yeah. Those guys really kind of irk each other. But guess what? They kind of need each other too. And I'm sure you could go do this with a whole bunch of different musky stuff. And again, I'm not here to divide the room. In fact, I thought about this after...
We're unifying the room is what we're doing. I think that's...
Right, but... Normally, if you get people upset, you've struck a nerve that they might either didn't want to think about, or, you know, it. People aren't very rational when there's something about, you know, really passionate about a certain subject. But that's why I'm like, hey, let's just go ahead and talk about trout here.
Yeah. But, you know, it's interesting, too, though. If you look at trout, you have the stock versus wild. If you look at bass guys, you know, you have the guys that fish the rubber live baits, the Rapalas, and then you have the bass guys that are out on the main lake fishing Lake Erie hardcore. Muskie's not quite, doesn't have that kind of divide against it. They seem to be
trollers, casters.
Yeah, I guess, but they're all serious dudes that are into catching a very difficult fish. You know what I mean? But maybe you're right. Maybe the troller caster is the divide, but muskie's just not an easy fish. There's a level of dedication that they all share, I think.
Casters, fly guys.
For muskie?
I don't know. I mean, you got a bunch of crap from somebody.
Well, that's true.
Stuff like that. The guys, you know, very, very small fraction. Barbless versus barb. There are some people that are crazy. I mean, how about, like, the handling people? The people that are, like... See a picture, they didn't like how you held the fish, and they have to comment. You're like, you know, that picture's 3 months old. Your comments are not changing anything.
Yeah, you're right. I guess if you dig deep enough, you'll find a divide in every
You know that muskie wrapped in that beach towel sitting on Nana's 95-year-old lap? Yeah, she caught that by accident. Guess what? Let her have her photograph. If that fish was found floating, guess what? She bought enough licenses in her life. She bought a new fish.
You are starting controversy, aren't you?
Well, I mean, I'm just trying to bring up stuff, you know, like how about this? The people that will endlessly defend a net but think a boga is the worst thing ever.
Well,
because I can, a car is supposed to drive me to and from, But if I plow into a bunch of pedestrians, it's now a deadly weapon. It's not intended to plow into crowds.
No, it's all based on use. Yep.
So
interesting.
I don't know, but just some stuff there. I had thought about this after I talked to you earlier today. I'm like, man, do you know it'd be really cool if I had some guests on, which, oh, I should probably mention. Steve and I had this podcast planned since July, and that's why Todd and Vance are not on here, is because it was just going to be him and I. It's also Christmas Eve, and I'm like, hey, are you free like right now?
Yeah, Andy texts me up, and for some reason it seems to be a new Christmas tradition around my house that we all get sick. So I got a little bit of a sinus thing going on. He's like, you got like a half hour somewhere on Christmas Eve. I know you're running everywhere. So this fits though, Andy, because this is like us trying to find 20 minutes toward the 4th of July and we couldn't. So here we are squeezing that time in at Christmas Eve. So it fits well.
Yeah. And I guess we started off with a purpose with a show, and we really haven't gone anywhere. I'm also in a weird spot right now. I started making baits about a week ago, and trying to get stuff all up and going. That, I mean, I guess anyone that's paid attention have probably seen that Vance is now guiding under his own name, and Todd is keeping his original name with Muddy Creek Fishing Guides, and also Vance is now the proud owner of the Stinger Glide Bait. So he is going to be manufacturing them under his own name. And I got him going about a week ago. Yeah, it was last Sunday. So he's going to be up and running there. I haven't heard of how many he made, but I gave him a good rundown of stuff, and we text regularly, and ever since he's had kids and stuff like that, phone calls have gone way down with just overall time. But yeah, things are cool there. And so now the swim baits are going to be 100% made by me. Todd might come up and help a little bit, and some shifting of responsibilities there on the AZ end. But I'm going to say, for what anyone's actually looking at, is you're not going to notice any difference. But I'm kind of at a spot right now where I don't have any hard baits, and I'm finishing up the harnesses for the swim baits, and I'm like, well, it's Christmas Eve. I don't really have anything going on till about after dinner. and I'm like, I have this idle time, and I haven't had idle time in a long time. So, all right, let's knock out a show. And I'm letting this coating I put on the harnesses for the swimmers, I'm letting that dry. I really can't mess with them. It just makes a horrible sticky mess on everything. And I'm going to need 4 to 6 hours to do a run of swim baits with the new melting vat that we have. And I don't have that today. I might try to shoot for that on Tuesday. I don't know. We'll see, but I have stuff that's keeping me busy right now. So, not a big deal. I don't have blanks from Todd, which we're going to meet up here shortly to fix that.
But it's funny, you brought up all that stuff. I mean, that's all kind of changes and developments that just happened since March. So just the progression of business models and time and how it all fits together, So,
yeah. And change of responsibilities and all that stuff. Yeah. And it's all good. But anyways, I started a thing. I'm bouncing around all over. So many stories that I want to tell. There have been some people that have kept in touch with me through text since our last podcast and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd ask about hunting or fishing or this and that. And I'd be like, you want to hear a story? But wait for the podcast. And I'd send them pictures. And they're what's this? And they're like, is that yours? I'm leaving cliffhangers here. I'm like, it's not mine, but I'm the one that called 911. And they're like, what? You want to hear a story about a deer? So, anyways, did I send you that?
What's that?
The thing that I had to call 911 about, and then it basically locked me in for 4 hours and I couldn't move.
I don't think you did.
Okay. Well, then that would make more sense what I'm saying. But
see, you're even leaving suspense for me.
I know.
For the podcast.
I need you to be a viewer.
I'm a viewer right now. Okay. You going to send me the picture? Is it a picture you can send?
It's a video. I'm getting here. I'm doing
am
it right
I, am
now.
Am I allowed to do a live take on this?
Just don't say what it is.
Let me see. Hold on. Okay, this is a live reaction. So I'm a viewer right now, right?
Yeah, you're a viewer right now.
Well, I guess a listener. We can't really see. So, what, dude? That's like an inferno. What is that?
Well, you'll have to wait for the podcast.
Yeah, I guess so. Dude, holy cow! So, okay, to describe what I'm seeing. It's a video clip with some structure or something on fire. It looks like it's in the woods, so maybe the woods are on fire on top of it. I have no clue. It's flames 12 feet high. Some, I don't know what the heck the blue stuff is to the left. Man. Whoa. That was wild, man.
So anyways.
So what is the rest of the story? Are you seriously going to wait to another podcast?
I'll tell you after this, but... But basically, while that was going on, to my like, what was happening there was to the right of this. This photograph was taken, and 100 yards to my right, that was going on.
No way, dude! That's a giant deer.
I can't believe I didn't send you that.
Well, I see. So the deer I've seen, but I didn't see the fire. So wait, did you set the house on fire to flush out the deer and then you shot it or what? How do these relate?
That's really desperate right there. If I had to burn a structure down.
I know, but this thing's huge. That's a giant deer.
But anyways, I'll catch you up after the show on that one. But so now that we got cliffhangers.
Oh, man, what a cliffhanger. So people have to wait like 8 months for a show.
I hope not.
And then I get a clip of a house on fire. With a giant deer, and the poor listener's going to wait till the next podcast.
Well.
Sorry, that's cool.
I mean.
Built suspense.
Todd's got hunting stories. Vance has got hunting stories. But.
Dang, that was wild.
Anyways. Huh. Yeah, so we had that crap going on. But, okay, so recommendations. Getting back to it after talking about trout fishing, muskie fishing, arson.
Everything else. So yeah, so back to the recommendations. I'll put data with this because this just shows how variant and challenging fishing is. All right, because again, you get recommendations for someone the night before, the next day, weather's different, fish, everything's different. So it just never seems to turn out as planned. And so I was looking at some information or data on. So I've taken like 10 guided trips in my life, all right? These are with fantastic guides, muskie fishing, that is. And of those 10 trips of guys that fish every day and have the recommendations of where the fish are almost all the time, in theory, I've only caught fish on 5 of those 10 trips. So 50% of the time, fish were caught. And of those 10 trips, 6 of the trips, the guide actually fishes with you. And only 1 of those 6, the guide caught a fish.
Two things can happen when the guide fishes, and they're both bad.
Well, but I guess the point is, even recommendations for those, like we took recommendations for captains on walleye fishing or being with a guide muskie fishing, it's still fishing. There's no guarantee. You got to take the recommendations with a grain of salt and the expectations. It just, you never know what you're going to get. And so, there's Andy and I thinking we're going to have a banner day of walleye. It doesn't happen. You know, you take a guided fishing trip. You're always excited. Like, oh, I heard 20 fish days. You catch none. That's fishing though. It's just a tough sport. And
recommendations aren't
always there.
So, like, this isn't the first time, and I know the guy that's giving me these recommendations genuinely is doing it genuinely.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Like, I'm not saying, oh, he's just giving bad info because he's worried that, my 3 times a year that I might go up there that I'm going to bring home a dozen fish, and that's going to hurt his chances. That's not it.
Right.
But I fall into this trap, and I've been – I don't want to say it's a trap because it's not done intentionally. It's like when I take the recommendations, it never pans out. If it's in my boat,
Wait a minute, though. Hold on. I'm going to take you back 3 years. 4th of July week. If you remember, I was catching fish on that one lake with a consistent pattern, and I called you and told you about it, and you went out and took your family out that evening and caught one. You remember that?
Yes. I guess
see,
I...
See, so there so was one. It worked.
There's one, right. I was kind of being very specific with this body of water and this recommendation guy.
Yeah.
And it's like, the thing is like, being Lake Erie, yeah. I know that there is structure, but having a boulder in the middle of a stream that's 50 foot wide and the boulder's, you know, 6 foot in diameter, and you're like, there's probably a fish behind this. If you're out in 70 feet of water and you can't really see anything crazy on the bottom, it's not like it goes from 70 feet to 30 feet and then it drops back down. It's for a blanket statement, and there are going to be some people that will argue, to me, that is structureless. You are going after suspended fish. You got to find them, and hopefully they're on. And how I view that is like, at any spot, there could be fish. At any time, those fish could be on. And it seems like when we're catching fish, we tend to not mark as many on the screen. When we start marking tons of fish everywhere, it's when we get frustrated. Now, that could be it, too. Is it just frustrating because we're spending so much time looking at that screen? Like, there's fish everywhere, and we're not catching them.
Yeah.
And I remember we went out way deep trolling. We came in way shallow. We tried different, whole bunch of different things. Lead core, flat lines. We tried dipsies. Yeah. We did everything in this area. And more often than not, I give the report and I'm like, yeah, we've got six after 6 hours of fishing. And it's like, oh, yeah, all my buddies, they went this way because there were no fish there. Well, when were you going to tell me this? After my day was done? It's me and another guy, and we do this once a year. You are not going to see Charter Captain Andy on the side of the 617, and I'm now taking food off their table.
Yeah. But the point is this, though. So this kind of ties it back. So recommendations, are they a valid starting point? I mean, because if in theory you didn't have someone saying, hey, try, this is where we were catching them yesterday, you're going to pound them, and you got nothing, and you're clean slating, where do you go? I mean, Erie's like, for once a year, you have no starting point. What do you do? So, okay. In theory, is it better to have that recommendation and strike out with the potential that it would actually be good, or just try it on your own and figure out what you got?
Sitting around on Christmas Eve, it's not like every year on Christmas Eve I think about this, but in the off season, I'm always like a half a phase off. When I'm sitting in the tree stand, just sucking, rotting up there. I'm like, why didn't I go walleye fishing more? That's fun. I should go and do that. And then while I'm waking up at 2 a.m. to go out there, I'm like, oh, man, this sucks. Why am I going walleye fishing? I should spend more time in the tree. And it's like I'm a half a phase off. Like, it's a type 2 fun, but it takes 6 months to realize how much fun it was. And I sit around and I'm like, why do I even ask? Like, and I know I'm going to get some of the, like, the hardcore Lake Erie people that are dialed. I can't imagine, and this is going to parallel to musky fishing, if the fish is going to eat, I can't see it not eating a silver spoon when it wanted a black and gold spoon. Yes, there's going to be some times that might be something, and we have examples. We've talked about Todd getting, like, 9 fish in a row on the same boss shad, regardless of where it was at on the boat. But if the fish are on, I don't think that they're that like, oh, no, I'm not eating that thing. If they'll eat a worm, where are their night crawlers in mid-column? Like, sometimes this is weird. You'll be out in 50, 60 foot of water. You pull up a walleye, you look in its mouth, and there's little baby leeches in it. Where did those come from? If there's that many little leeches in the lake, I'm not stepping foot in that thing because I'm going to be dry in a half hour. But, you know, you look at this, and you know, like I said, draw the parallels to musky fishing. Someone says we're catching them on big, giant rubber. Are you telling me that they won't hit a twitched crankbait? That they won't hit some kind of a jerkbait? I don't have a lot of good experience with topwater. I know some people in my area do catch them on topwater. It just has never been a high percentage thing for me, so I tend to not run it. But if the fish are active in the right spot, yeah, you can get them on topwater. But that doesn't mean they won't hit a jig or a creature on the bottom.
Well, the challenge with musky fishing is how many data points do you get in a day? I mean, you know, a two or three fish day is fantastic. So if all two of those three fish hit, let's say you catch one on one lure and you're like, well, this is the lure, and you catch two more on it. Unless you have five other guys that are fishing vastly different lures, and like you said with Todd's boss shad example, unless you have other elements in there to prove your hypotheses that this is it, who knows? Like you said, it'd just be an active fish that you happen to catch one or two fish on, and it's not the magic bait. I don't know. It's, again, musky fishing's a little harder.
Yeah, so like the only person I've actually seen do this was Todd. This is going back 10 years ago. I was fishing on his boat one of the first times I fished Chautauqua, and it was on his boat. He says, come on up, let's just go fishing. And I don't even know where we were at. And we were casting, and like he had some fish active and stuff like that, and he caught a fish. Like the bait had just hit the water, the fish blew up on it. And he's like, oh, these fish are on. And he's like, I know they'll hit this bait. I haven't caught one yet on this bait. So while the fishing was hot, you know, you had a window open, he actively took off the bait that just caught him a fish and grabbed another color.
Huh.
And said, I'm going to catch one on this now. And to me, seeing someone with that level of confidence is just like, you put it where it needs to be, and they're going to eat it.
Yeah.
And I feel the same way with the walleye up in Lake Erie. They are not smart fish. They are just fish. So when going back to like, where do you start? I say this during the off season. I said, why do I listen to recommendations when I'm going out on that lake? Everyone likes to try to make what they do out to be harder than it actually was. Oh, you need this size tippet with this size hook with this kind of fly on this line. And, you know, you got to have felt soles and not rubber soles. And you make it out to be like, oh, wow, you were dialed. Really? Could a guy with a split shot and a minnow not have caught that fish? But it's true. You try to make what you did out to be much harder than what it actually is. And I think once you can see through that, it's human nature. I do it too. I'm not immune to it. Once you see through that, you're like, you know what? Historically, middle June through the end of August, the fish are in this area at this depth. And typically what the whole seasonal thing is on Lake Erie is you fish them shallow in the spring and then you move out deep. The last trip that I went on Lake Erie, you went with us. Remember, I said, hey, let's go.
Yeah.
And we were in a friend of mine's boat, mm-hmm. him and his wife. And when was that, middle August?
Yeah.
We were in like 20 feet of water. If the boat sank, I would have no issues swimming to shore. I wouldn't be like, I'm going to die out here. I got this one. I'm confident I'm going home tonight. And, you know, but when you get out there, you know, 10 miles, you're like, eh, boy, I might be screwed. But I mean, we were really close to shore. And like, this is, I don't know if you remember me asking this. Now, this is going back several months. He's like, yeah, you know, these fish, I found this out from some guy that was loose on the internet, and I lined up spots, and all these guys are driving out 5, 6, 7, 10 miles to catch these fish. And this guy's coming basically with a rowboat, catching his limit and going back in.
Mm-hmm.
And I look at him, I'm like, if these fish are here all year, why are you driving out deep?
Yeah.
Like, Why? Why chase it? Why would, and I just look, I'm like, historically, fish are going to be in this zone. If you don't hit the active school, you're going to think that there's no fish there. And I'm sure there's sections that don't have fish. Relate this to muskies. I think if I go down a prime weed bed and I don't have a fish move, or I don't, you know, I don't have any indication there was a fish, part of you said there's no fish here. The other part is like, they weren't active.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when you keep coming and checking again and again and again. If it's not a, you know, a spot that's getting pounded, it's like, yes. Yeah, so the recommendation was probably true, but did those fish shut down? But if those fish shut down and your same person that gave you the advice said, oh yeah, I found out like an hour after you left that they're fishing over here now. Well, then that was a bad recommendation because you should have, yeah, like I put forth my fishing trip for the year in your hands. Part of me says, because like as you get salty, as you're sitting out there, you know, baking in the sun, trying to catch the next fish after you launch the boat at 3:30.
Yeah.
Like I'm doing the exact opposite of what he says. But
it's, well, it's funny though. If I think back to like my epic fishing trips, you know, those days, no matter what you're fishing for, I don't remember once ever off someone's recommendation that it panned out to be one of these epic days. There were almost always days on my own or something that just I found something by happenstance or got into a pot of hot fish or something. I don't remember anybody ever saying, hey, go to this coordinates or go to this bend in the river or go to this weed edge and you're going to wreck them. I don't remember ever having that. So again, it goes back to those recommendations of if people give them to you, are you better off just trying to forge your own day, which could be epic, or do you think that starting point has merit? Because just from what I've experienced, I just never had one off of someone saying, you know, you do this and you'll succeed to a memorable moment, you know, or level.
Yeah. So I think it kind of goes with age. I'm at the age right now, and I'm an old man, okay? But I have gotten to the point to where, and it might just be the level of BS you're willing to put up with. And once you hit a certain level, which I think it just coincides with age, you're just like, I would rather do it on my own and take a huge skunk than to be a hero on someone else's, like, hot bite.
Yeah.
And I was never really a bite chaser. And the whole premise of this that stemmed this podcast was our Lake Erie thing. And I have no problem saying, yeah, I ask where you guys are catching fish on Lake Erie because I'm doing this once. I am not going to be posting up photos of me with a yellow rope and the reverse bell bottom hip waders and stuff like that. This is basically a grocery run.
Yeah.
I this is not something I'm going to be calling my folks and saying how good I am.
Well, in addition, good luck spot burning. You take a picture, we don't even take any picture of this fish, but let's say you catch a 30-incher you want to take a picture of. What are you going to see in the background but lake? You're not even going to be able to.
I know where that wave is.
Yeah.
I don't know, so. But it's still one of those. It's like, I think at this point, I would rather fall back on my previous experiences and forge away. There's nothing wrong with saying, you know, if you're curious, like, hey, you know, I used to fish that area. Where were you getting them at? And just hearing the thing and then be like, okay, whatever. It's like that kind of talk is nice. And, you know, I give out a lot of advice on like, yeah, hey, this is where I've had past success. This is what I look for when I had success. But, man, I'm just going to say tread lightly with like a hot bite tip from,
yeah, or lower the expectations to what they could really be. Cause like I said, I remember that morning we're leaving at 3 a.m. You're like, man, they crushed them. They were out of here. We thought we were going to be back before the sun even came up.
We had already had plans on how long we were going to be doing other things before you had to get back.
Exactly. Cause we got authority from the family to go so long. We thought, man, we're back. We got another 3 hours to hang and do something else. You know.
Oh man, we'll be in the we can do a podcast when we're done. Like,
yeah.
We're gonna still be smelly from fish. How pure is that?
Yeah, exactly.
We're gonna have the first podcast that's scratch and sniff.
Oh man, yeah, did not pan out that way. Here we are, Christmas Eve, doing the podcast we wanted to do in July.
Yeah, because that 3 hours was eaten up with us just basically laying there, like there were buzzards circling over us. It was so bad.
It was so bad. Oh my goodness.
I mean, we did catch a limit, one man limit.
Yeah, one man.
It took like 40 minutes for us to get the first bite in the twilight.
Yeah.
And that's not a good sign. I like it when there's, like, you know, the whole 6x6. I like 12x5. That's my thing.
5 a.m., that means saying, not p.m.
I don't even know if we'd still be out there looking for number 12.
We wouldn't know. We wouldn't have done, because, oh, man. I mean, even if it gets to 6, because we were at 5 for like an hour and a half, saying we at least got to do limit for 1. And as soon as we got that dumb 6, we just brought everything into speed back because now we were past our allotted time.
And it was like, okay, I'm going to take my frustrations out on this motor. Just don't blow up. And it was just wide open and just like, suck this fuel. You're going to like it. I ended up not even going through a full tank this year.
Yeah, I didn't either. Well, no, I shouldn't say that. Now that my kids are in tubing, I did fill up 4th of July week because we tubed quite a bit.
Yeah.
But there was 2 tanks, not just 1.
Well, so, good.
Some people run a tank, what, every day, 2 days, you know?
Oh. So. Yeah. So, anyways, that's kind of our long... I if we're a little rusty, forgive us. But I thought we were entertaining.
I got a sinus headache. We don't even remember 3 months ago details anymore.
3 months ago.
That was old.
That was 6 months ago.
Yeah. Oh, hey, am I allowed to tell the one last thing that I caught in August? I know I sent you that video of that giant fish I caught.
Oh, that, I mean, if you want to tell that story now or save it, I don't care.
Well, the only reason I'm going to bring it up now is because I'm not going to remember it later.
You're not going to remember that.
Well, that I'd remember, but to tell it or not to tell it.
Okay, go ahead, tell it.
So the only reason I'm telling this is because...
We're old and we're...
but one of the famous podcasts, I think, that...
one of my most favorite stories.
There you go, how about that? Yeah, I wouldn't say famous.
It was Easter weekend.
The replica of the shark. Well, this summer we went out. You know, my nephews and I and my brother-in-law said, "Hey, you know what? Let's go get a shark charter in the evening." It was like, you know, 5 to 9 kind of deal.
Now, is this in the greater Pittsburgh area?
No, this is out the ocean out at Delaware.
What were you doing in Delaware?
We were vacationing. So
wasn't a business trip or nothing.
No. This was just a vacation. We all go to the beach. And so we all decided, hey, we'll get this evening charter to go back to try to catch shark like we did 20-some years ago. Because my brother-in-law was with me for the original shark story. So we go find this guy. And it blew my mind. We get in this, you know, kind of go in his boat. It's marina, kind of in an inlet. And he comes motoring out. We go, I'm telling you.
So you're on a shark charter. You're like, where are the barrels? Charter. Where's the gaffs? Where's the harpoons? We're going to get a shark.
Yeah. We go 200 yards from shore. I mean, you talk about like being able to swim. The captain's instructions were, if we go down, swim. There you go. There's shore.
If we go down, step off the boat. It's only waist deep and walk to the shore. We'll meet over there at the lifeguard tower.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was like 15 feet deep or 20 feet maybe, but it wasn't super deep. And it was, let's put it this way, there were guys windsurfing around us and further out. So that's how close we were. And it was wild because we caught some giant shark. So I ended up catching a 9-foot sand tiger, which was just incredible. And then everybody on the boat caught either a sandbar or my other nephew caught another sand tiger, but it was just blew my mind how big these shark were that close to shore.
And people having recreational activities literally over top of them.
Right there. I mean, you know, this captain was saying, you know, if you go so far out, there's a drop off and that's where the sharks kind of cruise. But I can't help but think some of them come off this drop-off and hit the shallows where people are swimming, you know?
You'd be foolish to think that, like, there's some imaginary barrier that, they're, like, the sharks just kind of know it's by code. An unspoken rule of, like, listen, you could peek over this ledge, but do not travel in there. There's things to eat up there.
Yeah. Dude, it was wild. It was – but it was – man, I just realized, though – so the other shark, the black tip I caught, again, fought like crazy, but it was only 5.5 feet. This thing, man, I couldn't move it. My back was like spasming. My arms were quivering. I said, I'm too old for this. It was only like a 9 or 10 minute fight because my nephew videoed the whole thing. But in the end, I was dead. I'm thinking, I don't know if I want to do this again. That was wild. It was just, but
so,
like, long story short.
How did you catch him?
What do you mean?
Like, okay, did you have, like, you buy a chicken breast and throw it over, or?
No, pretty close. He bought, like, we had, like, a chum basket. So he puts the chum basket out, like you see in Jaws. And then you'll drop either, man, what did he have? Bluefish or black bass or something. They were, like, cut heads and stuff. And then you just drop it down. And
did you have to catch your bait?
No, he had it all.
Okay.
Mr. He had it all. But it was, man, it was just action the whole time. Now, here's the funny thing. We weren't going to go. He canceled. He had a charter in the morning. There was a day charter, and then we were in the evening. He canceled it because the weather was so bad. And so he said, if you want to try, I'll leave it up to you. Well, man, it was, we were like in 4 to 5 footers. I mean, these were huge swells. I mean, it was unbelievable. But again, because you're so close to shore, you weren't as nervous as if you were, like, way out there. But we went out, man. There was lightning way off in the distance. It probably shouldn't have been out. But
so, like, on something like that, you might be able to see, 10, 20 miles on the ocean. I don't know. At what point does he be like, yeah, that's a little too close?
Well, so right at the end, when I caught my shark, so it was a four-hour trip. Everybody caught a shark but me. I was the last one. I made sure all my nephews and brother-in-law all caught one. And because, again, I have mine sitting on my wall, so I didn't need one. Well, then I'm getting antsy. I'm like a little kid now. I'm like, dang, I want one. Everybody caught one, So we're out there, and it's ticking down, and the captain's like, this lightning's moving in. Like, we got a few more minutes. Like, I was making sure we were getting the whole time, and right at the end, that's when I hooked it, brought it in. As soon as he grabbed the leader when he pulled it up, we got a good view of the shark, and then it actually thrashed, cut the line, off it went. So it was a legal catch. We talked about catching the leader, and then he's like, we're out. Let's go. We got it before the lightning came in. So it was right at the end, right at the 11th hour, bottom of the ninth, whatever you want to call it. So it was a cool experience.
That's great when that stuff happens like that. You kind of sit there and grind, and you grind, and you grind, and right at the 11th hour, the skies part, and they smile on you.
Well, what was weird, too, is we caught them, like, early. It might have been about 40 minutes out of we had to wait for the chum to, I guess, draw them in. Who the heck knows? But it was pretty rapid fire. Like, my nephew caught a big stingray. Then my next nephew is up. He caught a sand tiger that we got close, and it kind of broke off. So we got to at least see him. Then my other nephew caught a sandbar. And so they all went through, and it was like the first – the next 2 hours were action, And then it was that, like, last hour and a half was nothing. Like, it was, I'm up now. Finally, I'm up. And it was just nothing was happening.
It's probably because someone recommended you to go there.
Exactly. But so here's the point. I need you to figure out how to find me a sand tiger shark mount. I've been looking everywhere. It's an endangered species, or not endangered. What do they call it?
Threatened
or something. So there's not a ton of these things, and in this area there happens.
And you guys got two of them that day.
Yeah. So they're in this area. So from a global perspective, I think they're threatened from this area. You can catch them, but because they're threatened, you can't keep them. I mean, we're obviously not allowed to take them out of the water, and I don't even know if you're allowed to legally target them. But if you're targeting sandbars or some of these other ones, and they bite, what do you do? But there's no replicas for these things. So I can't find – I wanted to get, like, a head coming out of the wall because I don't have wall space for a 9-footer. But
how wide do you think the head was?
Oh, man.
Are we looking, like, 12 inches, 24 inches, 30 inches? No,
it was more 24.
Okay.
Here, I'll send you a picture. But let me send you another one. Now, here we are, texting each other during a podcast. But I need you to do, this is where you do your research. That's why I need to send this to you.
Because I found the last one.
Yeah, you did. Yeah, everybody remembers that story. So you're gonna have to try to find one of these, but like I said, I've contacted a few taxidermists. One said, "Oh yeah, I'm interested." And then when I told him what kind of shark it was, I didn't hear anything from him.
Hmm.
So I don't know if they're around. You know, and I'm obviously peculiar about the type of shark it is. I don't want to grin a great white and say, "Oh yeah, it's close enough." You know, so I sent you the photos to get a gauge.
I'm going
to
say, I'd probably say it's around 2 foot diameter. If I had to guess, like if you had to make his head, if you were looking straight at it, you'd probably be in that two foot diameter. It does kind of look like a great white.
No way.
Listen, you're talking to a guy that painted up some stingers in a great white last year. I know what one looks like.
Well, so there's your mission, man. So the next podcast is going to be that you found one and I got it somehow. That's what we're shooting for now.
Okay, next podcast. So that means I've got, 10 months?
Yeah. So, hey, we kind of blew you. You want to keep this half hour, right? You want to do short stints?
Yeah, and we're at an hour.
Yeah.
We'll see how things go. But, yeah, I think a cool little story here and there.
Yeah, it's cool. So I appreciate you having me share some of our experiences, Andy, over the last 8-9 months.
Yeah.
It's good. It's fun to do it.
It's fun. I like sharing how I crash and burn because I know that a lot of people struggle like me, and it's nice to know that a lot of people have good intentions. They struggle. They fail. They eventually get it, and to hear someone else have the same thing and not just, you know, oh, that's a huge buck. Yeah. Do you want to know what I did to get to there?
Exactly.
So,
but that's the beauty of hunting and fishing, you know? That's all what makes it rewarding and frustrating at the same time.
Right.
So, cool.
All right. Hey, get with the family. Have a safe, happy Christmas. And I'm going to say for everyone listening, thanks for listening, and happy holidays.